Well, it would have been Amy Lobota and Mike Morgan, but today we have a guest co-host sitting in, and I want to introduce Jim Dugan as a voice and a face that you may not have seen before. Hey, Jim, welcome.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Tell me just a little bit about where you're from and what you do flying-wise.
Cool. I'm from New Orleans, Louisiana, and I fly a Hawker 800 XP as a contractor all over the United States. And this is my seventh Oshkosh, and I've been flying corporate jets since 2000.
And you've been listening to EAA radio, I understand.
All the time.
Which is actually a pretty good recruitment tool sometimes for new volunteers. So thanks. Glad you're here.
Thanks for having me.
Our guest this quarter hour is Dr. Scott Fersig, who knows lots about aviation, defense, economics, education, and political issues that come from his experience, considerable experience in both private and public sector. Specifically, we're going to talk about your company, the company that you work for, Alsim, and flight simulation development for light airplanes. Hi, Scott. Welcome.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I used to think that a great flight simulation was kind of a solution to the world's problems in terms of flight training. I have come back from that belief a little bit as I've done more training in a real cockpit.
Yeah.
But maybe there's a little more truth to what I used to think.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, I mean, it's sort of with a lot of industries, as technology gets better and better, the simulation gets better and the capabilities. So it's definitely, the simulators today is a far cry or a big change from, 20, 30 years ago. So I agree. I think there's a lot you can do, a lot more you can do in a simulator, but there's still some things that's almost impossible to replicate in an actual cockpit. So I would agree with you there. But we've seen everything from now virtual reality, augmented reality, and it gets a little confusing for listeners, but there's more and more pedagogical tools and things you could do in a simulator to help students learn certain concepts that they're really battling with, maybe in ground school or in the airplane, that they can do on the ground in on a safe environment. So,
how important do you think virtual reality will be for simulators of the future, if not already presently? How do you see that affecting it? Is it a quantum leap forward in training?
It's getting better, that's for sure. I mean, it seems like every year the resolution and the technology gets better. Everybody knows it's coming. I think what's really important about it is it's a mobile, low-cost tool before you'd have to go into full flights or spend $500,000 on with projectors and those kind of sims. But what it could bring to the general public and to high schools and that sort of level is going to be very, very important for the future of aviation, for sure.
How would you describe the state of the art today in terms of VR and sim?
Well, it's really depending on the VR. I personally think that VR, more mixed reality, is important. The tactile feel of the touches and the buttons and that is very important in that. So, whether you're looking at TVs or you're looking at a visual system through a virtual reality, headset, it's sort of not as important as having that feel and the control loading and some of those other factors that we can do. Also, my company, we still focus on total really highly immersive flight training devices that almost look like level D full flight sort of capability in terms of visual systems, but having real cockpits helps the real Garmin. Like for here at AirVenture, we've got basically a replica of a brand new G6 SR20, as we're the official sim partner with Sears Aircraft, and getting in that cockpit with all buttons, it's the exact replica of your aircraft is highly important for them learning the button allergy and the flows, and then you pair that with the visual system, it actually feels like you're flying the aircraft.
So where's the dotted line then between what's virtual and what's real? I mean, if I reach my hands out, am I seeing my hands in the VR goggles, and what are they touching?
Yeah, so it depends on the company. There's a lot of different things out there. There's sometimes their app, iPads. Sometimes they'll have an actual setup with buttons, so you'll see your hands. It's often blue hands, but you'll actually be touching an actual cockpit and maybe stick or yoke and a rudder. So really depends on the different simulator.
Is that at the consumer level yet?
No, not really. You do have virtual reality on the Microsoft Flight Simulator 2020. Then you get that just I think it was like a year or two that came out. So I'm sure there'll be things that are more available at a more competitive price point, because even those are still quite pricey on the technology you would want.
I had a chance to see your simulator in action at the Cirrus 10, I believe.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. What does it take to build that? What's the build time from the first day to the last? How does that work for y'all?
Yeah. With Cirrus, it was an interesting partnership that we launched last year. They were looking for a really high fidelity, and they wanted, besides the larger, if you've seen our larger FTD is in Hangar B, if anybody's listening that's here at the event. and they wanted something a little bit smaller, and it basically just took the cockpit shell, and we used real Garmin, so we ordered the Garmin Perspective Plus, and some of the things that you touch and feel, we buy directly from Cirrus Aircraft. It took us about 6 months. We had to do a flight modeling, so we had to take a SR-20 up in the air and a few weeks of gathering data, and then our software team develops the flight model and does all the failures and build it in the sim. But it took about 6 to 12 months from start to completion. And it's now available on the commercial market for their Cirrus training centers, or that's usually our target. There's 141 schools and universities that fly the SR-20s.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Dr. Scott Fersig with ALSIM about flight simulation and the leading edge of the tech that's going into flight simulators.
And what would something cost? What would this cost a flight school to obtain one of these? How is that going to be brought forward on the cost and to make it something that students can afford?
Yeah. That smaller one starts around $150,000 because we do use real Garmin and in the entire setup and the software. The larger one is a little more expensive. It's built to a higher standard from the FAA's point of view, and that one's around $350,000. And it's becoming an integral tool for most flight schools and universities. These guys are spending 10 to 15 hours in the simulators trying to learn all the basics from how to take off, taxi, learn the Garmin. Before they even see the aircraft, but it's pretty amazing the results when they go through a sim program and then get in the aircraft, and the CFIs are quite impressed with their ability by when they do those types of programs.
Do you see a place where artificial intelligence can be used to shape and alter scenarios based on performance to sort of increase the level of challenge or things like that?
Great question. Big data, AI is the next step. We've seen it already at the airline level with the CAE, for example, has the RISE program where everything is being recorded. Every data that you could, everything on the pressures of on the stick.
My goodness.
And then give basically a pilot, and the plan is with the data, you'll have your own personal sort of flight history in a sim over the time, and then you can very easily pick up what are the issues, what are the weaknesses of pilots, and if you're seeing a trend in your flight school university over time that, hey, we're having an issue trying to teach this concept, then it's very easy for AI to pick that up.
It seems to me like you'd almost, as an instructor, have to be taught how to use and how to read that data and how to draw conclusions from it. I think that would be kind of complicated.
Well, usually the software now is getting so good that they will basically, you could bundle that up into different areas, and it will basically tell you if you write the right code of and make it easier to read that data.
What do you see in the future for your company? Any other models you're thinking about besides the Cirrus?
Yeah, well, we do almost all the training aircraft. That's been our bread and butter. We're headquartered in France. We're in 62 countries. And we just finished up a new 737-320-like called the Airliner, and the University of North Dakota just bought the first one. We're installing that at the end of the year. So that's we're getting rolling that out. We're excited. And that's really for a lot of the jet orientation courses for Capstone. There's a lot of they don't know if they're going to be flying a 320 or a 737, or they're going to be flying an Embraer. So it's close to a lot of those different models. So they're ready when they go for the type rating and in the interviews. So, and we're going to do the SR-22, and the 22T is a natural progression with Cirrus, and we're talking a lot more about things of how to better integrate the sim into the curriculum, because it's great to have a simulator, but if you have more tools, make it easier to teach certain skills that are more automated, what you're told before, and so we're planning on doing a lot more things like that in the future.
So if you'd get more done in the sim than is currently possible because the sim is evolving, aren't you just kind of moving the constraint forward a little bit, because there's still a certain number of hours you have to fly, whether it's in instruction or in, as maybe a flight instructor or in another commercial area. Mm-hmm. We've been talking all day with our various guests about how do you feed the beast on the 1500-hour rule, and it seems like this just moves the problem down the road a little bit.
Yeah. There's a lot of course, the regulations, depending on what country in, as we deal with Transport Canada,
right,
and EASA, and that, and some of Canada recently, about 2 years ago, changed their simulator requirements. But that's a big topic to discuss. And something I would personally recommend, I think would be a great idea, is if the FAA realized the immersion and the fidelity of the simulators where they're at now in 2022, to allocate more hours towards the 1500 hours. If the instructor CFI isn't teaching in an airplane or a really high fidelity sim, surely they should be able to log an hour or some of that sim time, then like an
in
airplane
lieu of.
Time. in lieu of some of the airplane time, just little step like this. The sim requirements are over, I think, 20 years old on some of the advanced aviation training
devices.
Great
point.
Yeah, so there definitely needs to be regulatory change because things are moving so fast in the tech world.
That's a great point. What does it come down to? Is it the fact that sim is not on motion versus motion that defines if you can record the time? Or what is the main character the FAA is looking for in a simulator?
Yeah, well, there's different requirements. You have the National Simulator Program, which I think they changed their name recently. They deal with the full flights, and they're called the FTDs, the flight training devices. And then you've got the quote-unquote lower level, which is the advanced AATs, and it's different requirements. National Simulator Program is good in the sense that they give some flexibility when you do that level. Then you can request things like circle approaches or approach to land in a simulator. So I think there's got to be some consortium, and they always want data, of course, to the FAA of proving that these concepts and what they're doing in the simulator works, and students are actually learning. But I think a lot of it's just going to take some lobbying, but I think the time is going to come soon, because everybody is realizing that, of course, with the 1,500 hours in the tech, that something does need to change.
Dr. Scott Fersig with ALSIM talking about the acceleration and improvement of the quality of flight training using simulation. Scott, thanks for joining us on Attitude Adjustment today.
Great to be here. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Doc.
So, Jim Dugan, this is the first interview you've taken a part in as a guest co-host. Kind of fun, isn't it?
It's absolutely. It's fantastic. Every day is fantastic at Oshkosh.
Well, that's true, but the quality of guests that we get to talk with is really kind of a phenomenal thing. If you want to interact with them or us, you can reach us at 920-550-1210 with a text. You're listening to EAA Radio.